Some of you know my parents quite well. Jim and Kay in the front seat have been good friends of my parents for many years. I'm seeing so many good friends in the audience, so I actually feel very much at home. Greg and Jill have been friends for many years as well. We're sort of family because we share family with Greg and Jill, so sort of family. But many of you will know my parents. My dad is with Jesus now, but my mum is turning 90 very soon, and she's doing quite well. Together, my parents gave my sisters and I a wonderful life. We grew up in an amazing Christian family. I always knew that I was loved. I had a wonderful family. And I have to say that even the age that I am, and many of you would be the same, my friends all went to Sunday school. We grew up in an age where Christianity was respected, and whether or not the parents were Christians, kids all went to Sunday school. My dad was always a deacon in the church. It was at Ashgrove Baptist to start with, and then Rosalie Baptist, and he was always a deacon. And that would be something that you would actually put on your CV. If you were a deacon in a church, you'd put that down as part of your resume because it was something to be respected. But, you know, by the time we reached the 90s, being a Christian was no longer something that was something to be respected. It wasn't a case that it was not to be respected in so much, but it was just a nothing. If you were a Christian, that was absolutely fine for you. Just don't shove it down anybody's throat. Kids no longer were going to Sunday school unless their parents actually wanted a day off, I guess, from the kids, or unless their parents went to church. But if you fast forward today, and I could go through that in a detailed way of what changed and how that changed, but that's not what I want to do today. But I want to fast forward to today where we actually find that being a Christian is now actually viewed with skepticism, with cynicism, and downright hostility at times. Owning your faith in the public square can be stressful. And for many of us, we're old enough not to worry about that stress. But for our young people today, it's really a serious issue for them. And so one of the things that I think is behoven on us as older people is to really teach our young people well so that they know what the answers to give when they're confronted in the public square. But for many of us, this shift in sentiment is actually quite confronting. And so my work with the Australian Christian Lobby, I've been working with ACL for 12 years now, and it has me front and centre in some very tough situations where I need the wisdom of God and my husband's shoulder at times. I can tell you that as well. So I'm going to tell you a few stories and how I dealt with them and what they happened. And then I'm going to tell you what I think the Lord's saying to us today. So the young man that you can see on the screen, his name is Chad St. James. And it was early in my piece in the ACL, and it was heading into the marriage campaign. And I had put something on my Facebook page about marriage and how God saw marriage. And he came back on his Facebook page, and somebody sent me a snapshot of it because I wasn't a friend of his on Facebook. But somebody sent me what he said, and what he said was really, really awful about me. Liable, actually. So I could have really taken, if I'd wanted to, I could have taken him to the Anti-Discrimination Tribunal for hateful speech. But I don't think that we should use what we don't agree with against other people. And none of us actually agree with these hate speech laws. We don't want these hate speech laws. So I don't see that we should actually use them for our advantage. So he had posted this. I private messaged him. And all I did was I asked him to catch up for a coffee. I said, "You've said these things on your Facebook page about me. You don't know me. You've never met me. Can I meet you for a coffee?" And he was in Brisbane. He was a journalist in Brisbane. And he said, "Yes, okay." So we met for a coffee. He was very, very outwardly gay. We sat, and he said, he immediately put his phone on the table, and he said, "I'm recording this." And I said, "That's absolutely fine." And so we just had a discussion. In the discussion that it came out, he actually studied at Cape and Ray. And so, you know, that was just like a door that I felt flung open for me, because he knew the truth. I knew that he knew the truth. He'd studied for 3 years at Cape and Ray. And I don't know what went wrong in Chad's and James' life, but something has. And I am convinced that God isn't finished with Chad's and James either. But by the end of the conversation, we hugged, and he said, it's been one of the most surprising coffee dates I've ever had. After that time, there were many times when my phone would ring all through the night, and it would be Chad, and he would be really drunk. And on the other end, there would either be abuse, or there would be sobbing, or there would be asking me a question. And at one stage, Peter said to me, "Turn, don't answer. You know it's him. Don't answer." I said, "Darling, who is going to answer if we don't answer?" So that was Chad. One of the things that has really always broken my heart is prostitution. And one of the reasons why it's broken my heart is that I've never had to even think about being in that situation. So every man that is close to me is actually good. My father was very good. My husband is very, very good. And my son is good. And my son-in-laws, I don't even know what I'm saying. This is my first and only marriage, everybody. Okay. My son-in-laws are good. So I've never had to view a man as someone that would purchase me. And it has broken my heart because I really believe that it broke Jesus' heart. There are many times in the scriptures when we read that it broke his heart. So it's been an area when I've got into ACL, it was an area that I wanted to actually make a difference legislatively. And so I've really fought for some laws that would outlaw the purchase of somebody for sex. And so I became known in that in the area of girls who have left prostitution, so the ones who have escaped from it. And so they knew of me. They've met me a number of times. We've had a lot to do with girls who have come out of prostitution. And so we got a call one afternoon, and it was from some of the girls who have left prostitution. Many of the girls who get out of prostitution, if they don't find the Lord, it's very likely they will go back into prostitution. If they don't find the Lord and they don't go back into prostitution, many of them identify as lesbian because they actually hate men. They come out hating men. And for many of them, you can actually understand why. It's not right, but you can understand why. So I got a phone call because Amnesty had just announced that they were going to support new regulations supporting prostitution. And so Amnesty globally actually support the practice of prostitution because they believe that it's a really good way for women in poverty to get out of poverty. It's appalling, and don't start me because I'll do a big rant about Amnesty. But these girls had found that out, and they contacted me and they said, "We're going to go into Fortitude Valley and stand outside the Amnesty office just to show how upset we are. But we thought that it might be good to have somebody who could, A, pray for us. They're not godly people at all. And B, if your husband was available, can he come and protect us?" So Peter stood a little bit far off. And the terrible thing was, like many of their signs, actually they turned the candle of Amnesty into a penis. I'm sorry to say that, but they did. And so it was so bad. And I got there and I said, "I cannot hold that sign. I can't hold that sign." So they said, "Find a sign for Wendy that doesn't have a rude picture on it. Find a sign for Wendy." So they finally found a sign for me that looked okay. And Peter and I stood there. He stood a little way up. You won't believe the filth that we got thrown at us that night as we stood in Fortitude Valley. And there were many times when I could see Peter itching to punch somebody, but he's not a big guy. Like he's not a huge guy. So he stayed controlled, but that was a place where we found ourselves. Then when we went to the City Tabernacle, City Tabernacle owns a building beside the City Tab that is used to be a hostel. I'm not sure what they're using it for now. Many of you know that hostel. Underneath the hostel, there is a hairdressing salon. And when I got to the Tab, I said, "Do we go to that hairdressing salon?" And the women actually looked a little bit uncomfortable. They said, "Oh, yeah, I'm not sure." So I went in and I knew exactly why they were a little bit uncomfortable, because it was extremely, extremely gay, the whole place. And the head hairdresser was very gay. But I'd already walked into the room, so I was pretty stuck. And so I ended up, he ended up being my hairdresser. Many of you will know that we had Carol's in the City. We ran that for 8 years. Jack ended up being the hairdresser for Carol's in the City. And he ended up loving Peter and I. I could tell you so many stories about Jack, because he wanted to know what we thought about his lifestyle. He wanted to know what we thought about him trying to arrange to have a child. He wanted to know all sorts of things. And sometimes when he listened, he got it right. And sometimes when he listened, he totally misunderstood what I said and got it totally wrong. But when Peter would walk in, because he'd come and pick me up from getting my hair cut, the Jack would stop everybody in the salon. He'd say, "Stop, everybody, this is my pastor." And and Jack would be wearing bright purple trousers, and Peter would go over and say, and Jack would reach out teasingly to touch Peter's hair. Peter would say, "You touch my hair and you're dead." Like, and Jack would laugh, you know, Jack would laugh. Peter never did get his hair cut by Jack. But I did. And, you know, during the marriage campaign, there was a really awful story in the media. It blew up about Wendy Francis and basically calling me every name under the sun, and how bigoted I was and how hateful I was. And so the next thing, I get a phone call and it's Jack. And Jack said, "Wendy, I hope you're not going to be angry, but I just contacted the Brisbane Times about you." And I said, "Okay." Now, Jack was one of the leading lights in the homosexual community in Brisbane, because he used to run like a big galas to raise money for the Mater Hospital and places like that, raised millions of dollars for the Mater Hospital. So he was very well known. He was quite a character. And I said, "Yes, okay." And he said, "Well, I rang and told them exactly what you're like. And I told them that there's no way that you're bigoted or hateful. And if you were homophobic, you would not be coming to me to get your hair done." And so he told them this book story. Anyway, it ended up with this big story in the Brisbane Times. And it was really special. And so the next day I went to one of those little shops that you can get little knick-knacky things, and because I wanted to get him something to thank him. And I saw one of those, it was a wall plaque, and it just was the name Friend, and it was cut out in that timber sort of style. So I bought that, and I turned up at his salon to give him this plaque, just Friend. And he was outside with his staff cleaning off eggs from the front of his... So the hatefulness is not just directed to somebody like me. It's directed to anybody who they feel is actually offensive to the LGBT community. And this was someone who was one of them. And the stink was terrible. It was summertime. The smell of eggs was terrible. And I straight away said, "I'm going to help you clean up." He said, "No, you're not. No, you're not. You're going. We're doing this." So that was Jack.
Did you give him the plaque?
I gave him the plaque, and he put it up in his salon. I'm telling you these stories because I'm telling you that these are potentially very hateful situations, and I think that what God always wants us to do is to respond in love, not in like, but never compromise on the truth. And the reason why I say never compromise on the truth is because of what we all know. And we all know that Jesus, there has never been someone more loving and more committed to the truth at the same time. Jesus is the very embodiment of truth. So it's impossible for Jesus to lie. And yet Jesus was always truthful. So when people came to him, and when there were times when perhaps he could be perceived as being hateful or unkind, he still told the truth. And in the end, there were people who hated him and there were people who loved him. And in one way, it's not up to us to decide who is going to hate and who's going to love. It's up to us to always love, but always tell the truth. And so that is one of the verses that Peter and I live by, to speak the truth in love. Think of the rich young ruler who came to Jesus. And all of you know the Bible stories as well as I do, but sometimes it's good to think back on them. When the rich young ruler came to Jesus, it says that Jesus looked on him in love. Do you remember that? That Jesus looked on him and he felt immediate love for him. But after Jesus had identified to the rich young ruler where he had failed, and the rich young ruler was pretty chuffed with himself and thought he hadn't really broken any of the commandments, he'd done them all. When Jesus pointed out that he actually had put his money above God, and so therefore he wasn't as good as he thought he was, it says that the young man went away sad. So many people today would think that if you love somebody, you are not going to send them away sad. Everybody wants to be happy, and happiness is the number one priority. And so they would call Jesus hateful because he actually sent the guy away sad. Whereas I think sometimes for us, we would grab that guy and we would want to talk to him, and who knows, we could have got him to pray the sinner's prayer. But Jesus didn't do that because Jesus could see his heart and we can't. But I do think there are times when we actually have to let people go away sad, because we need to always be people of the truth. Think of the woman at the well. And in a very similar situation, Jesus pointed out the problems that the woman at the well actually had in her life, but she didn't go away sad. She went away challenged, but she ended up being overwhelmingly joyful because there was repentance in her heart. And so truth can lead to sadness and truth can lead to joy. And then you think of the woman who was caught in adultery, and Jesus did not want to throw the first stone. He was the only one entitled to throw that stone. But he offered forgiveness, but he did then say, go and sin no more. So there was the love and there was the truth. Sometimes think of Jesus when he went into the temples and he overthrew the tables. It was a very deliberate act. Sometimes when we get angry, even righteous anger, we can respond quickly and, you know, figuratively turn over the tables. And it could be the right thing to do. But Jesus never did anything on the spur of the moment. Jesus knew exactly what he was doing, and he reacted with anger because of what was happening. He called the Pharisees a brood of vipers. So these are not platitudes to try and make everybody like you. Jesus was incredibly misunderstood. He was described as being of the devil, of Beelzebub. And in the end, he was killed. He was killed in the place of a murderer who they let go, Barabbas, and he was killed in the place of every one of you and I. Because the truth is, each one of you and I are also a murderer. Because the Bible, in the Beatitudes, Jesus said, if you've hated somebody in your heart, you've killed them in his. So he made the Ten Commandments so much harder. People say, oh, the Ten Commandments are Old Testament, New Testament is of grace. Yeah, Jesus just doubled down on them. You know, he really did. So I get a lot of flack from people, and I don't think that we should be surprised, because Jesus said, you'll be hated just as I was hated. And I do have people who hate on me. But I don't think that we should be surprised, because Jesus warned his followers that they would expect opposition. And so in the brief stories that I've told you, I think that there's ways that we can actually approach people, and we should always approach people in love. We should always approach people as if we could be in their shoes. It's what happens for me when I am with girls who have been in prostitution, because I think to myself, born to a different father, born in a different place, born without a home, kicked out of home, married to a different man, I can see myself being in that desperate situation, and I think it's good for us to be able to do that. But, you know, all of that hate that comes on me, I think God gives different people a different gift. And I think I've just got the broadest shoulders in the world, because I can come home from that I dump it on Peter and then I go to sleep. He stays up worrying about it. No. I question myself. I go through, okay, is there something that I did to, you know, to sort of make that happen? And if there is, I confess it to the Lord and I try and learn from it. But we all have different gifts, and I do think it's a gift because I don't stress about it. Do you know when I do stress? It's when it's Christians. Mm-hmm. I find that really hard. I do. I find that really hard. And it's hard when Christians will say, so I was at a, our son Joshua lives in Darwin. He's got 4 children. He and his wife have been in Darwin for probably 8 years now. And they work a lot in Indigenous communities. And so since he's been there, we've become quite involved in some of the politics around Indigenous communities. And so I'm passionately concerned about Indigenous rights in the right way, and I'm happy to talk to anybody about that later on. But there was a gathering at Botany Bay, actually, about the best way forward to actually bridge the real gap for Indigenous people. And, you know, I was there, and one of the real lefty Christians that I know, and I hate tags, but he, you know, you understand what I mean when I say lefty Christian, he came up and he said, "I am so surprised to see you here." You know, as if, why would you be concerned about Indigenous rights? You know, aren't you just worried about sex? Because everybody says ACL is just worried about sex. And I say, no, the culture is really worried about sex all the time. We are saturated about it. And so godliness needs an answer. It demands an answer to what the culture is going through. And, you know, it might not be a huge thing for us here, but it is for our young people. Our young people are bombarded by sexuality all the time. They have to now identify by their sexuality. That's their identity. They're asked how they identify constantly. And so don't have a go at me about, oh, ACL is just obsessed about sex. No, we're not, but the culture is. And God has an answer for it, and we will be prepared to give it. I have people surprised that Peter and I work really hard in the refugee space. Oh, didn't think you'd be worried about refugees. And these are Christians, you know. They're really surprised when I march with the Greens, for instance, and please don't anybody march with the Greens unless it's against the Pokies, because I forbid you to march with the Greens. No, I'm joking. But the Greens were marching against the Pokies in Brisbane, and I said to Peter, I'm joining them. Like, this is just ridiculous. They had the Queensland State Government has passed special legislation to allow the place in Brisbane that they're building with all the gambling, with the casino. They have passed special legislation to allow them to have more pokies than is allowed anywhere else in the nation. So the Greens were marching. I marched with them, and people and Christians say, "Oh, surprised to see you there." They make assumptions about me all the time, and I have so many Christians who come up to me and say, "So good to see you. I love what you're doing. I don't agree with everything you say." And each time I say, you know what, I probably don't agree with everything you say either, you know, but it's just such an unusual hello. Hi, my name is so-and-so. I love what you're doing, but I don't agree with everything you say. But I say, okay, do you know, Peter and I have been married for 42 years and I don't agree with everything he says. Like, you know, but I don't say that every morning when we wake up. They're little things and we're working on it. But, you know, there is so much we need to be worried about. One of the big things is the gender conversion therapy stuff. It is diabolical. We are telling our children from kindergarten age that they can choose what gender they want to be. And I'm not making it up. We are reading them books in our kindergarten. When you enroll your child in kindergarten now, they ask you what your child's pronouns are. So we are identifying again from that age. We are aborting 37-week-old babies in Queensland. There was a news report just about 2 weeks ago. You can Google it and find it. That happens in Victoria as well. Our two states are the only states I've heard of that late an abortion. But you imagine, don't imagine, because God even says don't even imagine what goes on in the evil. But a 37-week-old baby being aborted is an ugly thing, an ugly, ugly thing. And so, you know, we have so many issues that the only answer is Jesus. The only answer is God. And, you know, we must continue to speak the truth in the public space because of our children and our grandchildren. Peter and I have 11 grandchildren. The eldest is 19 and the youngest is 10 months and she's adorable. Like, she's just that adorable age. But, you know, when I see all this stuff about gender identity and that, I just fear for them. I have a real fear in my heart. And I guess because I work in that space, it's more relevant to me. But I think we have to be speaking the truth. I love Johnny. Peter and I were very privileged to be invited to go to Billy Graham's funeral. And we went over for the funeral. It was the coldest we have ever been in our lives because we didn't realize how cold it was going to be. And we were Brisbaneites with our little, you know, jacket on that we thought was good enough. I wanted to grab Carl Fazer's and pinch it from him, but he didn't look like he was going to share. But I sort of fangirled over Johnny because she was there and I was like, oh, there's Johnny. And Peter was like, settle down. It's okay, darling. She's in a wheelchair. Don't jump on her. Like, you know. But she says, and gradually though, no one remembers exactly how it happened. The unthinkable becomes tolerable and then acceptable and then legal and then applaudable. And, the thing is, unless we actually applaud some of the evil that is happening today, we are being offensive. So it's not even as if we can just live and let live anymore. We must celebrate evil to be accepted. And we must not ever do that. We must not do that because that is not truth. And if we are committed to truth, we're committed to love. And if we are really committed to love, then we are committed to actually speaking truth, because if we really love, we will be truthful. I don't think we should ever go looking for an argument, and I don't. So when, when I go get my hair cut with Jack, and he's not my hairdresser anymore, he moved into his own home to do his hairdressing, and so I felt that was a step too far. So I didn't do that. But, you know, when we were with Jack, I didn't go looking for an argument, but I answered his questions. I don't go telling other people how to live. I don't look for being any controversial at all. It often comes to me, but I don't look for it. And I think that we can always put ourselves in the alternate position, understand where they're coming from, listen to them, listen to why. The stories of girls who have been in prostitution, if you hear their stories, you just weep with them, you know. And always remember that we are merely sinners saved by grace. I am what I am because of Jesus. I love by the grace of God, I am what I am. I am what I am because of his grace. I'm no better than those who are in darkness, and only God has brought us the light. So I always remind myself, pick the hill, pick the timing, be careful, don't go out looking for an argument, but always be prepared to give an answer to those who want it. And so that's really my heart to you. I'm happy to have any questions now. And if you don't have questions, I've got more stories I can tell. But I thought I'd stop now and have any questions at all.
Wendy, before you do that, would you mind taking us back to Johnny's?
Yes.
Thank you. Is your life in danger in any way? Your
Yeah.
In other words, do you have? You know, you can have an armed bodyguard like they find in South America.
Yeah.
So just talk to us about, the protection you have.
So is my life in danger? So ACL are really careful with me. For instance, I go to Canberra in sitting weeks, and I was staying at one of those little do you remember those Caratel sort of places that you drive in and you park right outside? Well, there's a little one in Canberra, and it's the cheapest place to stay. It's clean. I was staying there. And then the deputy director said something about, where are you staying? And I told him, he just about passed out. He said, Wendy, you've got to stay somewhere where it's, you know. So ACL do look after me. But the story I'll tell you is one night Peter and I got a phone call, and it was the Australian Federal Police. And they have known me because I've worked with them on cases of girls being trafficked. So we've worked with them in that. So they said, Wendy, it's so-and-so from the Australian Federal Police here. How are you going tonight? Good, thank you. Well, we just need to tell you that your name has been flagged on our terrorist list. And I said, okay, so what does that mean? He said, well, if a name gets a lot of hate in social media or in posts or even in overseas posts, a red light comes up to warn us that this person could be in danger. So your name has come up. It has been highlighted. So we need to tell you a few things. We'd like to come around and do an audit of your home. We live in a Queenslander. You know what a Queenslander's like, not secure. So I said, no, don't worry about that. That's absolutely fine. We have angels around our place. And he said, okay, angels or not, we're going to send a car around to watch for the next couple of weeks. He said, but also for the next period of time, if you use your phone and you dial 000, it won't go to 000. It will come straight to us and we will be able to track you and we will come to you. So it was like the bat phone. So that's the only incidents I can tell you that I really did feel as if, wow, this is really serious. And again, Peter and I just felt an overwhelming sense of peace at that time. But there are times when people try and block people from coming into our event. I have to say, my office is in the Queensland Baptist Centre in Mitchelton, and they have been outstanding to me because we hold events in there. They've got a hall, they've got two halls, and I use one of their halls for some of our events. And there have been times when police have contacted and said, look, there's going to be a big protest. I have gone to the QB Centre and I've said, there is going to be a protest. The police will keep them outside. But I understand if you would want us to move from your facility. No way, Wendy. We've got your back. You're fine. So God has put me in a sweet spot, to be honest. And I feel really as if nothing's going to happen to me unless it goes through His hand first. There are very disturbed people out there and they are very angry. And many of them are angry because they believe passionately in their cause. And we believe passionately in our cause as well. Can I tell you the difference? Because they believe passionately in their cause and they just get angrier and angrier. We believe passionately in our cause and we just get more and more joyful. So it's very big difference because the more passionate in our cause we get, the more we know that only God can do it, but He uses us. And there is a joy in that. So we get, the passion is strong. They get more and more dark and we get more and more light. Any other questions?
I'm having a bit of trouble understanding the logic of people that are promoting gender therapy, conversion, when they're opposed to Christians conducting conversion treatment for homosexuals. If you're opposed to that, surely you'd be far more opposed to gender therapy where you're changing somebody's gender.
Yes. And so what you're saying, you know, to change somebody's gender seems so ridiculous when you oppose us even praying for somebody. What you're saying is the logical argument, and it is certainly the godly argument. And the reason, because it's logical, there are a lot of people in, particularly in radical feminist circles, who are totally on side with us on this. And so I went to Canberra, the last 2 weeks I've spent 5 days of the 2 weeks in Canberra with four mums whose children have transitioned, and it is devastating. So two of them, one of the boys and one of the girls, have had their healthy body parts removed. And not only that, but unspeakable things have happened to their bodies that is just diabolical. And so When I went, I know there's a very strong women's liberation sort of feminist group in Canberra that I've met with from time to time because they also really oppose pornography, they oppose prostitution, and they are very opposed to this gender ideology. And so I find it very helpful to go with them because if I walk in, I'm a Christian grandmother, that's what I am, and that apart from being a child of God and Peter's wife, that's my identity. That's the third thing. You know, I'm a child of God. I'm Peter's wife. I'm a Christian grandmother. And I look like a Christian grandmother. I dress like a Christian grandmother. I sound like a Christian grandmother. So when a Christian grandmother walks in with a radical feminist who looks like a radical feminist, who sounds like a radical feminist, and certainly speaks like a radical feminist, it blows their mind. And the funny thing is that the radical feminists say to me, because I say to them, it's so helpful to have you here because, you know, it breaks the stereotype that this is just a religious argument. And they say to me, it's so helpful to have you here because it breaks the stereotype that hairy underarmed women are just angry and want to get their way, you know. And so they feel the same. They feel like we are ignored because of a stereotype that we sit into, so they love it. And we sort of, I can loosely talk to them about, I could talk to them about the Lord. They're happy for me to talk to them about the Lord. They get angry if I talk to them about abortion. And I've said to them at times, let's not go to the topics that we know we will disagree on until we're ready to go there. Mm-hmm. So let's not talk about abortion and let's not talk about marriage. Maybe not even talk about men. Let's stay away from the topics that we will definitely disagree on until we feel safe with each other. And for many of them, that time has come that they do feel safe. But for a lot, they still don't. Even with the abortion issue. So I have a very radical feminist friend, and she was like, don't mention the abortion, you know, because I'm so pro the right of women to have an abortion. I said, okay, I think there would be one area even in there that we would agree on. She said, no, there wouldn't be. I said, well, what about in China, all the babies that are aborted are girls? And she said, yeah, that's diabolical. So, so I said, well, there you go. We can always find a common ground if we're looking for it. And you know, not everybody who we think would be opposed to us is. And some of these women have got the whole butch haircut. They, you know, they're just, and I love them and I learn so much from them. And I just know that they would never meet, they don't meet another person who loves Jesus, apart from me in their lives many times. They would never go into a church. And so we've had opportunity to share with them. We've had opportunity. We did take one into the City Tab when we were there. Her name's Caroline Norma. She won't mind me saying because she's actually a really good friend, Dr. Caroline Norma. And she's a lecturer at RMIT University and she's an expert on prostitution. And we were having a forum. So it wasn't a church service and it wasn't on a Sunday. It was a forum. And Caroline happened to be up and she was with us. And I said, look, I would love you just to share. I said, but can you please not use the F word? Just like, just don't use the F word. She was like, yep, no F word. Well, I think because she was saying no F word to herself, one of the first words that came out in the City Tab was the F word. I was like, oh, I'm so dead. But all credit to the City Tabbers. They just took a big, deep breath and they, because I had warned them, I said, you know, Caroline is not one of us in that way, but she has a lot to offer. And so, yeah, I was grateful for their graciousness. But afterwards she said, I said it, didn't I? I said, yeah, you sure did. Like, yeah. A few. No. Yeah. Yes.
I listened to a lot of Jordan Peterson, and then with Jordan, he talks about it's only really 3% of the whole community that is this slant.
Yeah.
Why is it that it's so focused on women and not men?
Is this the gender ideology?
Well, you're talking about these ladies.
Yes.
So why is it we don't have men like this so much as what we're talking about?
So I think there's different areas. So in the area of particularly pornography, men are way overrepresented there. In the area of prostitution, the women are the ones who are prostituted and the men who are the ones who are the buyers. So, you know, I think in that area there's a bias towards men. But in the area of gender ideology and identifying as a different gender, there's a lot of research being done as to why it is, because it's overwhelmingly switched. If you go back 20, 30 years, if you go back 10 years, this was not even a discussion. The thought that somebody would have body parts cut off when they were 15 years old would be like an absolute, it would never happen. So if you go back 20 or 30 years, it was men who all of a sudden in their older years decided that they wanted to start dressing as women. Really strange, very rare, but that's what was happening. That was transgenderism. Now it's a 4,000% increase in girls, young girls, wanting to identify as boys. And so it is largely girls. There's a lot of reasons why people are saying it. One is the pornography, because the first sexual experience for a girl now is usually violent, because the boys are being trained on porn. So they experience this sexuality thing. They think, oh, I don't want to be a girl. I never want to have that happen to me again. The other reason is because of body image. And, you know, from the time that you are very young as a girl, you are judged on how you look. And this is a really sad thing. And I'm telling you, I'm in my 60s and I still worry, you know, I still want to try and, you know, look okay. Women, and I think it's a good thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, because I think God loves beauty and he wants us to feel proud of how we look, or not proud. Pride's a bad word. But he wants us to be feminine to enjoy that. But it's gone so far that we, from a very young age, there are bits of us that we hate. Women hate it. We look in the mirror with, oh, I don't like that. I don't like that. Yeah. Don't look in the mirror. So then the increase in eating disorders is very closely linked as well. So we went through a stage of having anorexia nervosa, and it was mostly girls, very few boys. And so the girls would look in the mirror and they see that they are somehow overweight, their hips are too big, their face is too big. The answer is to diet, and they diet, and some of them die because of it. Now it's that the gender dysphoria seems to have taken over those eating disorders. And unfortunately, once you start going on puberty blockers from 12 years old, cross-sex hormones followed closely on, and then actual medical procedures, you have made changes to your body that you will never recover from for the rest of your life. So I think body image is one of them. I do think pornography has a lot to do with it. I think that girls still feel as if somehow they are, that to be a boy would be a better thing.
Do you think social media has...
Social media is definitely, and we are seeing in a group, so let's say there's a chess group or a ballet group, you will see four girls from that ballet group all changing their gender. In the same class, you will see 15 kids changing their gender in a class level. So in a grade 8 class, you will see, and you'll see groups of them, and they all go on social media. You see the most horrendous, I don't go looking for it, because I still am someone, so I work in the area of pushing back on pornography. I have never searched out pornography. I've never looked at pornography. I don't believe that you need to taste rat poison to know rat poison's bad for you. And so I have people say, oh, how can you say that movie's bad? You haven't even seen it. I say, I know it's bad. I don't need to go and see it. The social media is horrendous. And so you've got people showing off the way their body parts have been taken and how good it is and how wonderful they feel. We have school curriculums that are telling the children how good it is to do this and what a release it is for them to finally feel that they're born, that they're in the body that they should have been born in. It's diabolical.
So would there be a percentage of doctors that would not be happy with having to change these children?
There's a lot of doctors who are not happy about it, but it's against the law in Queensland, in ACT and Victoria, for a doctor to advise any other treatment other than affirmation. So it's against the law.
So by that you're
they can only affirm the child to... If a child comes, I think I'm born in the wrong body, the only treatment a doctor can give in Queensland, ACT and Victoria is to put them onto puberty blockers straight away. Oh. So the puberty blockers are meant to actually slow down or stop their puberty from developing, the very thing that fixes crazy teenage brains. Put up your hand if you did not have a crazy teenage brain, and I will tell you, you did, because you're just forgetting, because everyone had a crazy teenage brain. Puberty is the very thing that God has given us to actually bring us through that and out the other end. But we block it at 12, which means that boys' testicles start to shrink immediately. Girls start developing hair where they shouldn't develop hair. Their shoulders, The voices immediately change. Boys who have been on puberty blockers from 12 years old, their voice will never be as deep as a voice, a man's voice would normally be. And it's not, people say, oh, it's just, it's reversible because as soon as you go off the puberty blockers, it changes. No, because the, even the front cortex of your brain is affected by puberty. And so you are slowing down even the process of your brain. And this is experimental. No, we haven't done this before. Some of the medications that are being used on our children are used for heart failure and things like that because when you have a heart issue, testosterone can sometimes help in that area. So some of them are being used right out of context. And, you know, a woman my age has traditionally been told, okay, if you're going through menopause and you need hormone replacement therapy, that's fine, but probably don't use it for more than 5 years at a time because there could be a cancer risk. These kids are going on hormone replacement therapy from 15 years old for the rest of their life.
Wendy, I've just got a question about the political scene in Canberra. Personally, I find it hard to believe that politicians on both sides are really excited and happy about the way these ideologies are coming in, you know, marriage, you know, morals, biological changes, norms. I find it hard to believe in their heart they're really happy about it.
Yeah.
My question is, with organisations like ACL and others, is there, you know, is the salt of light starting to engage in there, or is it very much just management by crisis? In,
yeah.
Actually, I think I know the answer to that.
Yeah.
It is. ACL and other organisations
are making an impact yet? So are we making an impact? The only gauge I can really give you on that is that I have open doors across all parties except I don't at the moment with the Greens. In Queensland, when I was Queensland State Director, I did have an open door with the Greens. And God, I believe that networks and friendships are the way, to get through. And when I was in Queensland, I was able to connect with Larissa Waters, and so I did have an open door into the Greens, but not in Canberra. It's a very dark place. But when we're talking about all the minor parties, so certainly One Nation, United Australia, those sort of parties, but when you're also talking about the Labor Party and the Liberal Party, I have open doors. And so are we making a difference? I can't help but believe that what God says in His Word that that my word will not go out and come back void. So He also says that truth was lacking in the public square and that He was dismayed by truth being lacking in the public square. So He needs us to keep speaking the truth in the public square. He doesn't need us to do anything. He wants us to keep. That's what He tells us to do. And He has promised that His word won't return to Him void. So I do have open doors. We have more losses than wins, and we have very few wins. But at the same time, we're not called to be successful. You know, I've been coming up to Mount Tambourine all my life, and I have heard so many missionary stories, and I've heard really amazing missionary stories, and I've heard missionary stories of people who've been on the field for like 15 years and seen two converts. And don't tell me that one is better than the other at their job. No way. But God, God rewards faithfulness. He doesn't reward success. And so we have more failures than success. But I do think the fact that we've got the open doors, one of the reasons why we have an open door is because we are very respectful, and we do approach this very respectfully and also with very good research. And loving on them. But I think the other reason is that we have 250,000 plus followers. So that is one of the largest lobby groups in Australia, if not the largest. We are probably about three times at least, probably at least four times as large as the Liberal Party or the Labor Party. We have a lot of supporters, and we have a lot of volunteers as well. So of the 250,000 supporters, and they are people who are supporters. So we, on our database, we have a lot of people who are haters. But these 250,000 have either signed a petition or they've volunteered or they've done something. So we know they're supporters. And of them, we have about 9,000 people who are active volunteers. So these are the people who they letterbox for us, they make phone calls, have a funny story. I can see your hand, so I'm going to come to you next. We had a funny story about Mark Latham. How can you pick Mark Latham? Like, he was like, you know, we didn't like him. Now we like him. So, he's great. He's so on fire against this gender fluid stuff. He's like one of the champions there. But anyway, he rang us on a Friday. He rang the national office and he said, I've got a petition up in Parliament. I've got a petition calling for an inquiry into gender fluid ideology in schools and calling for that basically any of this ideology to be withdrawn from schools. He said it needs a certain number of signatures, and I think it was like 5,000 signatures. It needs that many to be tabled. At the moment, I've only got about 1,800. So is there any chance that ACL can get onto their people and get signatures? And we said, we're onto it. So we called our volunteers. We actually brought them into some of the facilities that we have all around the place, and we rang in to every Victorian supporter. So in Victoria, supporter, we have about 25,000, as far as I remember, in Victorian supporters. So we rang all these people. We talked them through it. We said, this petition is up there. We want you to sign it because this is what it means. Do you want me to help you, you know, go through it? Because it wasn't an easy. So we did all that. By the next Monday morning, there was like 30,000 signatures on this. Because our people not only signed it, but they told all their friends they had to sign it. So then Mark Latham rang, and we have a staff meeting on Monday mornings, and he rang and he said, can I join your staff meeting? And I said, absolutely. And so on he comes to our staff meeting and he said, I'm not a believer, but what you did over the weekend was a miracle. So he swore, and I was like, oh, yeah, okay, there's the first time in an ACL staff meeting that a bad word like that has been used, Mark, but thank you so much. But he was like, I'm not a believer, but that was a miracle. And so, yeah, our supporters do that. Can I go to your question?
I was just saying about being with the gender, like working in the industry, early childhood industry, and I have a lot of staff members there that are gender
fluid.
And
yep.
They are loving people. They
absolutely
show the most respect.
Yep.
And all the staff.
Yep.
And I love them.
Yep. Wow. Yep, absolutely.
Resources for grandparents and all of us, have we got some books we can...
I have written books, but because we came straight from the airport, I haven't brought them up. But I have written a couple of books about girls and boys, but they're aimed at children. I've written 4 children's books, and I don't put anything in these books that I wouldn't read to my own grandchildren. So if I'm talking to my grandchildren about pornography, I don't want to talk about pornography. I want to talk about the good and the beautiful and the wonderful, because that's what God tells us to look at. So I'm really happy to, you know, if you contact Greg, I can send you some books as well.
God doesn't make mistakes either.
No, God does not make mistakes.
And I just want to encourage you, for the fruitfulness that you've planted those seeds in all those, including your hairdresser. Mm. You don't know what the future is for them.
That's right.
And you don't know who they'll be able to afford.
No.
And then all those other stories. So I want to say thank you for your fruitfulness wherever
you have
gone. Even though you said it was more negative than positive for you, you've got to think of the fruit at the other end.
Thank you. Thanks, Greg.